I'm Simona Kwan. I'm from NYU School of Medicine, and my presentation is a little different from the previous two. I'm going to be focused on the work that we do in New York City, really focusing on community-engaged research initiatives and thinking about how to sample and survey and reflect the needs of our communities without the benefits of something like the CHIS, which we are so envious of and we always go to in terms of looking at what's going on in California. So at APHA, I have no relationships to disclose. So in terms of the aims of my talk, I'll focus on some of the social and contextual factors just to make sure we're all on the same page. I'm sure you all have seen several of these slides already, so I'll kind of zoom through them, but I just want to make sure that we're oriented on the same concepts. Talk a little bit about what our mission is at NYU Center for the Study of Asian American Health, and some of the strategies and recommendations that we have in collecting disaggregated data and really meaningful data on our communities. So Asian Americans in context, I think everyone knows that we are one of the fastest growing minority populations, and we will be 10% of the population in the U.S. in 2050. In terms of where we are located, while we are concentrated on the coast, the West Coast and the East Coast, you can see that we are spread throughout the U.S., and so there's a lot of geographic diversity as well in our community. And this was a figure that the U.S. Census put out. So in 2010, we numbered about over 17 million, and this is just a breakdown of some of the Asian subgroups. The size of the boxes correspond to the size of the community. So the Chinese community, excluding Taiwanese, is the biggest population. And then we have Filipinos, Asian Indian, Korean, and then all the other groups in going down to 5 million Singaporeans, right? No, less than that. And so Asian Americans really do represent about 30 distinct Asian subgroups. Because of the tremendous diversity and the lack of data, as we've been talking in the first two presentations, there's a tendency to aggregate the data to bring up the numbers so that we understand what's going on in the communities. And when we do this, we actually look like we're doing pretty well, right? So Asian Americans come out looking much healthier than the general population and certainly more than other racial and ethnic minority communities. And this was back in 1987. I don't know if any of you are, some of you are old enough to remember this Time magazine cover. But what we're seeing is that this is really a persistent model minority myth. Even today, we're still seen as overachievers that have exceeded exceeded success in the U.S. and that that we are still overachievers. And that we're kind of a monolithic community, right? That we're kind of there's blanket statements about our communities. But in reality, we know that. Asian Americans and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders are living in poverty. There's tremendous diversity within that. And with this is data looking at 2007 to 2011, and we were one of the fastest growing poverty populations during that period, increasing by 38%. And then in terms of income levels, you can see again that there is tremendous diversity in terms of income, and so. And this is just a slide looking, talking about just a snapshot of what's happening in New York City. One in four Asian Americans lives in poverty in New York City. The fastest growing senior population is the Asian seniors, and they have the highest poverty rate among all seniors. Approximately 30% of Asian seniors live in poverty, and one of four Asian students do not graduate on time or at all. So kind of debunking that model minority myth. And then in terms of New York City, we are actually, we are the number one, the metropolitan statistical area with the highest level number of poverty in our communities. So this is just a figure looking at limited English proficiency among Asian Americans and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander subgroups. you can see again tremendous differences in terms of LEP in New York City compared to this is the U.S. rates, where 35% of AA and NHPIs report being having limited English proficiency. 60% of Asians citywide in New York City are LEP, and the rates really vary across the subgroups, with the Chinese at 67, Korean at 63, and so on. This is probably a slide that's very familiar to many of you. This is pooled data from the National Health Interview Survey that Barnes et al. Did in 2008, and looks at some selected health conditions, and again, aggregated out by subgroups, and you can see that there are wide differences between subgroups in terms of different conditions. And so, I want to just talk a little bit about our Center for the Study of Asian American Health, which we call CESA for short. We are we're funded through there's a P20, P60 mechanism through the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. They fund research centers of excellences. There are probably a little bit over 70 of these centers, and there's only one devoted to Asian American health, and that's ours. There's only one devoted to Native Hawaiian Pacific Islander health, which is at University of Hawaii. So we take it very seriously that there's only one of us, and we really find that, like Dr. Ponce was saying, we find ourselves being advocates. We're always advocating for the need for more centers, for more research that's ongoing, and really trying to promote the work of our colleagues. So in terms of our guiding principles, we have systemic change through multiple strategies and working with diverse stakeholders. We're really looking to develop strategies that are sustainable and embedded in the communities. So we use a CBPR approach, so community-based participatory research approach. And we focus on action-oriented research that focuses on asset-based approaches, so moving away from that deficit model where we're just focused on disparities or differences, but really thinking about what within the community can help, what empowers community, what can facilitate the work that we do. And we really focus on multicultural evaluations, really thinking about practice-based evaluations that really focus on the context. This is just a schematic looking at the spectrum of community engagement, and we really try to focus on those last two, focus on collaborate and empower. And so in terms of our work in identifying strategies to disaggregate and collect meaningful data, we talked already a little bit about data pooling, and that's one of the key things that we have relied on in terms of looking at some of these larger national, regional data sources. Again, data pooling doesn't, while it allows us to maybe aggregate enough within subgroups to tease them out, it doesn't address the limitations within that data set. So if the data is not being collected in several Asian languages, then it's still not going to represent those groups. We also focus on large-scale national, state, city-based EPI studies like CHIS. We were fortunate to be part of the REACH risk factor survey that the CDC did for the REACH US communities, and so that really focused on oversampling specific communities within census tracts. And so our communities that we were focused on were Asian Americans in New York City, and so we were able to get four waves of data collecting 900 individuals who lived in high-density Asian neighborhoods, census tracts in New York City, and so we were really fortunate to have that data set, and I'll give some examples of that. We also focus on innovative community-based sampling, things like respondent-driven sampling that Dr. Ponce mentioned, and really focused on using CBPR and a mixed methods approach so that we're really kind of triangulating data that and really confirming and complementing existing data sets, and then looking at what we can collect and showing specific things that are happening in populations and comparing them back. So this is just a couple of examples of the work that we've done. So this is for New York City, the health department released this data showing that smoking has gone down 35% since 2002 to 2010. But what we were hearing in the community was that, you know, the rates haven't really changed in some of the Asian American subgroups. And we would go and talk to the health department, and they said, well, our data is showing that we're doing really well in this area. And we said, well, we would love to drill down more and see what's happening in some of our communities. And so we had that REACH risk factor survey, and so we were able to compare our data set to the New York City health data set. And so you can see that Asians look like they're doing pretty well in terms of smoking prevalence. But we pooled our data, so we had 900 each year, and so we pooled 3 years of the data, and we were able to show that that there are differences. We weren't able to get a lot of different groups, but this survey was conducted in Cantonese, Mandarin, and Korean the last 2 years, and so we were able to tease out some of the bigger groups. And so we showed that the Korean population is actually smoking at a higher rate than all the other groups. And then when you break it out further by gender, that you're seeing major differences again. And then in terms of some of the data sets that the data measures that we find that are important, looking at place of birth, we also saw differences in foreign-born versus U.S.-born. And looking at language spoken at home and gender. So these are really important measures that sometimes aren't collected in some of these national data sets. And so hepatitis B is also a big disparity in our communities. And so we really focused on, we were part of a larger coalition that that implemented a citywide screening and treatment program. And this was something that was really grassroots, started from the ground up and collected. So it was this community-based screening program. So we used that opportunity to create a clinical data repository. So we put all the screening data in there and then the treatment and follow-up data. And in the end, about 9,000 individuals were screened. And with that data, we were able to release several publications that we hope moved to advance the field a little. But in the course of doing this project, we also noted that there were, while there was high acknowledgement that about hepatitis B, there was a lot of misinformation still in the community, and that people knew that they should be screened, but there was reluctance because we were finding a lot of stigma related to hepatitis B. So we decided that it was important to do an education campaign, but not just an education, but really a screening program, a social marketing campaign to drive behaviors into getting screened. And so we took the opportunity to do community-based sampling. We went to high-density areas. We did an environmental scan to really figure out which areas that we wanted to target in terms of focusing on the very high-risk hepatitis B populations. And then we ensured a randomization where we picked a marker at these venue-based or street intercept locations, and we picked every third person that walked by and surveyed that individual. And so this is some of the data from that survey where we looked at the differences in utilized health sources. And then we also complemented it with qualitative data so that we really were, again, triangulating the information we were collecting and thinking about where's the best place to put this campaign and where do people actually go for their health information. And this is just some of the print ads. And we did a 30-second PSA. And again, it was really a partnership between community organizations, the health department, and other groups that allowed us to do this work. We also have several community health worker intervention studies. And again, we use mixed methods approaches for all these studies as well. We build in a one-year formative data collection phase where we collect not only community-based quantitative surveys, but also qualitative interviews and focus groups to really understand the issue that we're trying to address and the best ways to develop an intervention. And then finally, I wanted to talk about our community health and resource needs assessments. And so we really wanted to, there is a lack of data in New York City on our communities, and we're really focused on trying to understand the health priorities in order to inform our own research priorities and guide the research that we conduct, and also to give back information to the communities so that they can use it in their advocacy work, in their policy work. And so We did our first round from 2004 to 2006, and we surveyed over 1,000 individuals focused on basically 10 Asian subgroups. But we realized in 2013 that we really needed to do a second round of the survey because the communities had changed so much. So we saw in New York City a 30% increase from 2000, and now we numbered 14% of the population in New York City. And that we were the only group that experienced a growth in all five of the New York City boroughs. And so so we decided that we would focus our second round and do another 1,000 surveys. And in figuring out which of the communities that we wanted to survey, we noticed that there was a lot of change in some of the groups, so we really wanted to be responsive to that. And you can see that the largest percent increases were in the South Asian communities, but also the Nepalese and Burmese populations, which had really small numbers in 2000, had grown tremendously during that point. And so we knew that we had to also focus on the Himalayan Asian communities. And so in terms of our process, we started off by conducting key informant interviews with our main community partners to think about what are the most important topic areas for the survey to address. And then based on these interviews, we developed a master survey, which has a main core of questions that we took from validated surveys, a lot from CHIS, for example. And then we also developed these topic-specific modules that we knew wouldn't be relevant to all groups. So, example, smokeless tobacco, which we created mostly for some of the South Asian communities that we were interviewing, which we knew might not translate to the other communities. So we really took up the opportunity to work with our partners to refine and tailor the survey to implement and disseminate, and we're working with them to disseminate the findings. And right now, we are over 1,000 surveys collected, but we are we have several other groups that we are committed to also surveying. And this really speaks, we surpassed our numbers and we are continuing to do the survey because it really speaks to our partners being so invested in this and wanting to have this data available to them as well. So in terms of health equity, we know that there is not one size fits all, and that we really do need this targeted approach along with this population-wide approach. And I think what we're seeing is that increasingly there's an emphasis on population-wide approaches and focusing on policy and systems and environmental-level strategies, and that if we can affect the health of the general population, then everyone's health will be improved. But we really know that that's not true. If you're not being reached by regular campaigns, then you're not going to be reached by these population-wide strategies either. And so this is one of our newest studies called Reach Far. It's funded through the CDC and has we are working in partnership with several community organizations. And this project is really focused on looking at existing evidence-based strategies that are population-wide that are already being implemented and figuring out how to ensure that our communities are being reached by these population-wide strategies, and that we're benefiting and our health is improving as well. And this is just a schematic showing you the multi-pronged approach, so that it's really focused on things that the health department is already doing, the CDC, like Million Hearts, but making sure that the materials are culturally and linguistically relevant to our communities and tailored. And so I just wanted to end by focusing on some of the strategies that we've been focusing on in advancing health equity. We are continuing to think about social determinants as an approach to the work that we do. We continue to think about racism and the model minority myth, and continually bringing that to the forefront as to make sure that we are benefiting equally from some of these ongoing initiatives. We're also continuing to apply CBPR principles and focus on genuine community engagement and really focusing on that asset-based approach, advocating and supporting disaggregated, meaningful data, and really thinking about research and interventions that make sense in the community that really yield practical benefits. And focusing on this health in all policies, which I saw as the theme for next year's APHA. Really thinking about all the different policies that can affect health outcomes, so education, the criminal justice system, housing and transportation, really focused on engaging other community organizations, faith-based organizations, barbershops, beauty salons, thinking about the life course perspective, which I think is very important in our thinking about Asian American communities, when someone has immigrated over, thinking about the diet and home country and how it's changed from in the new environment. These factors really, you know, what we eat as children really do influence health outcomes as adults. Thinking about intergenerational approaches and the family-based approach, and blurring the boundaries between clinical practice and community health promotion, thinking about community health workers as liaisons from communities to clinical practices, utilizing community centers and organizations like the Y and senior centers to really serve as bridges also between community and clinical issues. And then finally, just some of our information. We invite you to visit us on our website, although our page is locked right now because NYU is revamping their whole website, and so if some of the information looks outdated, that's why. But our Facebook is up and running, and our Twitter, and that's it. Thank you.